Hello and welcome to Kitchen Curiosity, the podcast that delves into the heart of food service equipment and hospitality. I'm here today at the FEA conference in the Cotswolds, a beautiful setting, and we've got quite a lineup today of guests coming on. I've got the CEO from Rationale AG, the parent company of Rationale Group, and I'm also talking to nine different professionals from across the spectrum of our industry, from a provider of energy optimization to recruitment to manufacturer to distributor, and they're coming on the show to talk about the FEA conference and other things. So I'll get on with the show and I hope you enjoy it. I'm now joined by the CEO of Rationale AG in Germany. He's over here in the UK for the FEA conference. Just come off stage. Peter, nice to meet you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Obviously, you're the CEO of one of the most respected brands in the market, really, and market leader as well. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey in the company and what attracted you to join Rationale when you did those years ago?
Yes, I did my studies at the University of St. Gallen in Switzerland, where I originally came from. I worked then for 21 years in a university spin-off, which is a very reputed management consulting company.
Okay.
At the end, I was running that, and we got approached by the founders and the former CEO of Rationale with the question whether we could help them in revitalizing their corporate culture, which is very important for them. And that was the first time I heard about Rationale. I had no clue.
Okay.
I think that was 2010. And I have to say, I had no clue about the industry. I did not have any contact with that industry before.
Right, okay.
And the more and more I learned about Rationale made me say, if we get this customer as a customer, I want to do that project. So, which we finally did then. And then I was working for Rationale as a consultant for over, I would say, 18 months. Mm-hmm. I got to know all the senior management. They got to know me. And so finally we had some attraction.
Yep.
Among the two of us, which then made me stop my contract, travel a little bit with my partner, and then start with Rationale as a member of the executive board.
Okay.
And then taking over as the CEO 1 year later. So
okay.
My predecessor was there 17 years. And so to say, I'm the second one after the owner stopped leading the company by himself. At that time, Mr. Meister was in the supervisory
yes.
board still as
yeah.
a chairman.
Okay. So how long has it been now to...
I'm in my 13th year.
13th
yes.
year. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, Rationale is quite a unique culture, really, obviously, with engineers, chefs, kind of all working together.
Yes.
How have you nurtured that culture as CEO? And
I have to say that the culture was there. It was not me bringing that to
okay.
it.
Okay.
But it was me helping it to grow with the company. I think that was important. We are now almost 3,000 associates all over the globe. So, and that's, of course, with more people, you have more different people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting more and more important to take the time to tell our new associates what we are here for. How do we want to do that? So we need to explain our strategy, which is very simple. We need to, or our purpose, if you would like to say so, that's more modern. And we need to explain how important customer benefit for us is. So this is the center of all the activities at Rationale. And we need to make sure that our employees understood that, because if they don't, they are not working in an appropriate way from that perspective.
Yes.
And they have to understand and share the belief that if we do good for our customers, it's good for everything else, for the company, for the employees, for everything,
yeah.
even for the climate, yes,
of course.
The sustainability. So that's what we are doing. And there, I think we did a lot of things in the last years. You know, we have workshops for new employees to transfer that message to them. And those are things we developed in the last, I would say, 10 years. Yeah.
Okay.
Because they were needed now.
I mean, obviously, Rationale sort of built on innovation and consistency, quality manufacturing. How do you balance that with kind of tradition, you know, the history of Rationale, and then how do you keep evolving, moving forward?
Yes, good question. So with new people, they're coming new ideas, and you have to be very careful in telling those young, ambitious people, yes, that's a good idea, but we don't do it. We will not follow it.
Right, okay.
You can do that in a very fair and rewardable way, of course, you know,
yes.
But the company, Rationale, knows what to do. We do not need, we are not looking for a, how to say, you know, it's not like the car industry, which is completely changing at the moment.
Yes.
From whether it is combustion driven mobility or otherwise driven mobility. So they are in a great transformation. Luckily, we don't need that and we don't have it. So it is important to remain or to keep our core as our core.
Yes.
Make it clear to everybody joining us that this is the core and it will not change and they have to accept it.
Okay.
And luckily, we find enough people who like what we are doing, and they want to be part of it. So they support us.
Yeah. And also, you're kind of setting the standards in combination ovens and obviously multi-cooking. What sets Rationale apart to the other manufacturers, do you think?
I think it is, of course, we want to have the best quality of food coming out of our equipment. That's still the main reason. If we look into our customer surveys, customers tell us the food we do with Rationale is better than in other equipment. So
yeah.
This is our, I think, most important thing. But then, of course, there is not only the product which has to be reliable. We are in a B2B environment. You know, at home, if your oven is not working okay, you find an alternative. You probably order some food with Uber Eats or whatever. But in our customers' kitchens, there are people waiting for food, you know, and not one nor two. It is thousands sometimes. So
yeah.
We need to be reliable. And then next to the product itself, I would say we are very good with our network. That means we have great dealers supporting us and we have great what we call them Rationale service partners worldwide.
Yeah.
They are not part of Rationale as a company, so they are independent, but we train them every year, we audit them, we want to make sure they are at top knowledge of how to maintain and repair our equipment. And there I think we are we have a better network than many competitors. And that's also important for customers when they buy. You know, they want to be sure somebody's coming in a decent time and is repairing or maintaining the unit so we can go on working, we can go on cooking.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I've experienced that. I mean, I'm a chef by trade and a consultant.
Okay,
and,
so you know.
You know, in London, you can, I'm sure it annoys the manufacturers because in London, it can be 2-3 hours. Rationale service partner can be there.
Yeah.
It's as short as that.
Yeah.
Obviously more remote, it's a little longer, but yeah, and I've experienced that. So here in the UK, we're talking a lot about TM65, embodied carbon in the equipment, life cycle analysis, and a sort of general sustainability. What's Rationale's view on that? And what are you doing about sustainability?
Even before that was a hype, Rationale always intended to make every product better in regards of sustainability. So every new generation of combi steamer reduced the amount of water we are using,
okay.
The amount of electricity or gas we are using to cook, reduced the amount of cleaner and other agents you need, and we increased the quality of the food. So we even took care not only for the input resources, but also for the what's coming out. So the food which is in a combi steamer is healthier than if you boil it in water.
True.
The rule as a chef, you know, the shorter you cook it, the better it will be. If you cook something for a... there are some exceptions, of course, if you go to overnight cooking and so, I that's not what I mean. But if you cook it and then hold it and hold it and hold it, it will not become better in quality and it will not become healthier. So we also take care of the, I would say, of the health of the guests of our customers. So we make sure the food quality is getting better and better. So that for us is a absolute clear statement. We always did that. So, and nowadays, of course, we see a lot of regulation coming, and it is for us more the question, where is our way? So we know about TM65, but our way goes with a product carbon footprint. So we have now more than 1,000 PCFs out there for every combination of product and market and usage you can imagine. So we have, and this is verified data. Mm-hmm. You know, this is reliable data. It took a little bit longer, especially for our UK colleagues. They were quite impatient, but I hope they understand now. But now we have that data, and we are happy to share that with all our customers, with all the kitchen planners and consulting companies in there, even with sustainability certification companies or agencies. They are free to see that. We don't need to hide something, and we are ready to confirm that that's the truth we have to our best knowledge right now. That was our way, and that's
a big,
the way
big piece
following.
Of work.
Yes.
Really
imagine.
Yeah. What role do chefs play in rationale, innovation and sort of the development process?
Oh, very important. So we call us the company for chefs and the company of chefs.
Okay.
So we have 600 former chefs in our sales force. We have another dozen chefs in our application team. Also, letting us know what is the need they have, where do we need to innovate into. So we try to get senior management joining Rationale needs to spend days in a professional kitchen.
Okay.
We want them to...
Oh, seriously?
Yes. I spent 1 week in a senior citizen home in the kitchen.
Wow.
Morning 6 o'clock to 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow.
Then I went to the office.
Yeah.
And I learned so much. We need to understand the chef's needs, the chef's stress, and to understand how can we help him. Maybe he doesn't know what to do in order to help him, but that's our engineer's job then, and our creative guys in our R&D department to think about how can we solve that thing, how can we take out the stress they have, and so on. So for us, very important. So we are, in every restaurant, I try to talk to the chef, because for us, that's the person we have to help. And the better we understand their needs, their problems, their challenges, the better our products will finally help them.
Mm. And I mean, Rationale now, it's synonymous with combination ovens. I mean, people in kitchen will talk about a Rationale.
Even if it's not.
And it's become kind of, I think it's fair to say, almost like the iPhone of bits of kit that chef wants. That's when I'm designing, chefs always want the Rationale.
Yes.
What's driven that?
That's 50 years of hard work. And I only can reward all those many, many people that have been doing that in the last 50 years. Some of them are, they are no longer with Rationale. They are no longer on this planet. They enjoy paradise now. So, but that has been a very, very hard work for many, many years to create that reputation that if you ask a chef, what combi oven would you like? He and she says Rationale. I tell that to anybody asking me, I'm talking to investors, to analysts, since we are also a stock change, traded company. Ask a chef everywhere. And this feedback that's coming from many, many people working very hard, being reliable, helping the customers, being there if something is not working.
Yes.
Looking back at the supply side crisis, we were we were hit by that dramatically, more than others.
Okay.
But we were always honest. We said, in the beginning, we said, we can't tell you when we can tell you a lead time. We can't.
Wow.
Because it was so much out of balance. And looking back now, customers...
Huge stress.
Yes. But customers appreciate that we were honest with them.
Yes.
That's also reliability. That's trust. It's finally, at the end, it's the trust the people have in the brand Rational.
Mm.
And that has been created over decades.
Yes.
And we are earning on that trust. And I tell our people all day, every day, you know, it is important for us that we also do help to create that trust and to keep it. So that's driving us as a motivation.
Mm. Okay. I think you might have already answered this, but I'm going to ask you it again anyway. If you could describe Rational's mission statement.
Yes.
In a sentence, maybe not a corporate sentence. What would it be?
That's very easy. That's public. We tell that to all the new employees. Rational helps the people in commercial kitchen cooking. Means okay. With their thermal, you know, putting energy into food, as an engineer would say.
Yes.
That's our purpose. And we want to do that better than any other. So...
Yeah. And I think you probably do.
I hope so. I hope so that in most of the cases we do.
Yeah, definitely. So just coming to an end, and I know you're a very busy man, Peter, so I appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
A couple of light questions. What's your favourite dish? Do you cook at home much? I know you're probably travelling a lot.
No, we seldom cook at home. So when I come home late in the evening, I usually eat as a Swiss, you know, I like cheese. Yeah. I always have some cheese in my fridge and I have some bread. I like bread. So that's for me a very typical dinner. On the weekends, we go out and maybe visit a restaurant. And I'm not a very fancy chef, so...
Okay.
I'm not.
Quite straightforward.
But using the iCombi Pro, you don't need to have chef expertise. So I could cook on that. I don't have one at home, of course, but I could.
And... if you weren't leading Rational and in a food service equipment career, is there another career that you thought of as a child, like a race driver or footballer or something?
As a child, I wanted to become a doctor, a medicine. Okay. So that was really the final decision. Do I study economy or medicine? I decided for economy. But otherwise, I would be a doctor flying in the Swiss Alps, helping the people. Okay. So, you know, we have those...
Yes.
Like the Royal Flying Doctors in Australia, we have something called Rettungsrega, it's called. Every Swiss is a member with them and pays maybe 50 francs a year. So they would fly him or her out of an accident or whatever. And they have doctors on board. And that's what I would do.
Yeah, that's a good job.
See all those nice mountains in between.
And finally... if we meet again in 5 years' time, what do you hope Rational will have achieved in 5 years?
I would hope that we are still leading in customer satisfaction. So we do that. We do a Net Promoter Score survey every second year. And my wish would be that all of the people then being part of the Rational family worked so hard and great that we end up having a great customer satisfaction.
Perfect. Okay. Well, Peter, thank you so much for your time. I mean,
you're very welcome.
Remarkable how Rational has influenced the food service equipment market and is driving as well innovation. So, and I really appreciate you spending the time here to come and talk to our listeners. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Perfect.
My pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So now I'm joined by three professionals from our industry, actually from around the globe. I've got someone from the US, someone from Germany, and also... a good colleague of mine from the UK. Wayne, welcome to the show. Do you want to introduce yourself and tell our listeners about you? I mean, most of them know you anyway.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brad. My name is Wayne Bennett. I am the VP Sales and Marketing for the UK and Ireland for MKN.
Okay. And MKN, I think most people know MKN, but what do you do?
So MKN is a professional thermal cooking manufacturer. We offer the complete thermal solution. So anything from a tabletop fryer to a fully custom bespoke cook suite and everything in between.
Okay.
So we believe we are at the premium end of the market.
Yeah.
And we like to bring innovation, and being a independent family owned business, we are allowed to keep innovating.
Okay. So. And quite rare, but we'll come back to that. It's obviously quite rare in this current market of consolidation. Martin, welcome to the show. You came from Germany yesterday, or?
That's correct. Yeah, right, okay. Yesterday morning. Yeah, I'm Martin Ubel. I'm from Germany, as you said, and I'm a colleague of Wayne. I'm working for MKN, and I'm a part of the executive board at MKN.
Okay.
Responsible for the marketing and product management part, but here at the FAA convention, I'm in my role as FSAM president. So I've been invited by John Cunningham, and it's quite interesting. Happy to be here.
And FSAM, what is FSAM?
Yeah, FSAM is the European Association for Food Service Manufacturer.
Okay, so it's basically FEA of Europe.
FEA is actually a member of FSAM.
Ah, okay, right.
And FSAM is collecting all the national members, the FEA in the UK, but also the HKI in Germany or others, France, Italy, all more than 10 nationalities. And we are taking care for the interests of the food service industry on a European level.
Right, okay.
And we take care for topics where we have common sense, I would say.
Yes, and joined up approach. Bob, also welcome. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank
and
you
you're
for
from
having
the
me.
US, so a bit further afield.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in the US, but I also travel the world because the majority of my clients, really, I serve manufacturers.
Okay.
In the form of CEO of Specify.
Yes.
But my start was with CookTech. I developed an induction cooking company in 1996. Built it and then sold it to Middleby in 2013.
Okay.
And since then have been buying companies using my family investment office money, mostly startups.
Right.
Specify is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And I spend half my time running Specify. And overall, what we do have software programs that help people design and quote restaurants. But really, our business is helping manufacturers digitally transform their business so that they can have a more efficient distribution channel and see and have visibility into what's going on around the world. Because the major issue for most manufacturers is that, yes, they are global in nature and where they sell, but the specification process is hyper-local.
Yeah.
And if my software can tie that visibility from the global manufacturer into that restaurant that's being designed in Bangkok, then I've achieved my objective for the manufacturer.
Okay. And for sort of listeners that don't know Specify, it's, well, you can explain maybe, it's a quoting platform. Was it more than that?
Right. So I would say 5 years ago, I would say we were a design and quoting platform for people who are specifying restaurants. And it was a digital catalog for manufacturers to put their BIM files, their CAD files, and all their helpful information, including having configurators so that people could specify the product in the way in which the factory can make it.
Okay.
But now we're much more than that. We have what I would call sales enablement tools, which are very useful for manufacturers, where people, even without design experience, can take an iPad and drag and drop products into a kitchen design right in front of their customer. Wow. And immediately go to a quote. In addition to that, we have a lot of integration since we have API technology now, because everything we do is in the cloud. It allows people to, instead of have siloed information from their accounting system, their CRM, now all of this can be tied together.
Right.
So that there isn't these silos of information that don't talk to each other anymore, which is, I think, critical for all manufacturers in the world to adopt this digital strategy.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for that. So, gentlemen, I mean, we're at the FEA conference today. Beautiful setting. It's not raining, which is good. Wayne, I've only just started. How has it been? I don't know. I was outside, so what's been going on so far? And
yeah, absolutely, Rad. I had the privilege of being on one of the panels yesterday.
Oh, were you? Okay.
So I was on the sustainability panel,
yeah.
Which was a great discussion point, actually. I think there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing around this topic, a lot of uncertainty of where do we go, where's the direction of traffic, and actually getting everyone in the room just to have an open dialogue and discussion to talk about where the journey was 2 years ago, where we're and what we've achieved so far and where we're going,
yeah.
was fantastic. And it's thank you to associations like FEA that enables to bring people together that we can have those dialogues.
What's the headline of that yesterday? What was the big takeaway from it, I guess?
The big headline is actually changes ahead. We're now in a situation with the likes of CBAM coming forward. Bream have just updated their certification, Bream 7, which total cost of carbon is now mainstream within Bream. The topic point was, it's no longer a nice to do, it's a requirement.
Yeah.
How we get to that point, that's still the uncertainty. That's not really mapped out for us clear yet.
Yeah.
But everyone seemed to understand that we as an industry have to collaborate more and actually set that journey, otherwise it'd be forced upon us from government or further afield. Yeah. So having different associations, obviously Martin with FSM here, we're an importing country rather than so everything generally comes in. There's not many handful of manufacturers that are
making
from the
UK.
So we have to engage and collaborate more on that topic.
Definitely. Sure. And so, Martin, from your perspective, were you here yesterday for that discussion as well? Or
yes, especially the General Assembly they had. Very efficient 2 hours, I think. And really very creative ideas in terms of the digitalization of and sharing information in another way. And this is really very innovative and thinking forward.
And why is it kind of important for you? Obviously, you're here representing the European arm of manufacturers. Why is it important to be here?
For me, it's important to see what are the discussion points you have in the UK and to compare it to what do you see in other countries in Europe.
Okay.
And FSM, as I said before, the job of FSM is not, because there is a kind of a competition within Europe, no doubt, but there is also a spectrum of topics we have common interest. And there's nobody else taking care for these interests on a European level. And I can tell you, especially when it comes to the European Union, there are more than 20,000 bureaucrats sitting in Brussels, having great ideas, having every day coming up with something new. You have to handle this. You have to take care for this. Otherwise, you are the victim of the story and you sit aside and somebody is telling you what to do and what's happening. So at least we it's our responsibility also for the FEA, and that is what they are doing very well, to inform right in time so that the industry can adapt the strategies, the action they have to take for the future. And also sustainability or CO2 is a big issue. But it's only one of them. We have a complex world at the moment, a lot of things happening, a shortage of labor, that's what I missed before to say.
Yeah.
So cost pressure and that you don't have no people anymore. So we have to, the industry, the manufacturers have to provide solutions for these kind of challenges.
And
then we will have a good future. Then, because Europe is Europe in general, also the UK or Germany or others, we have a high level of living, a standard of living. So it's expensive, so we never can produce and develop or manufacture the cheapest equipment in the world.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's so important to be the most innovative.
Definitely. Okay.
And then you will have the customers out there.
And Bob, I mean, if you come... So are you sponsoring here?
Because we specify as a sponsor of the FEA. And actually, this is my 10th FEA, I think.
Oh, cool.
CISA. FEA.
Wow. Yeah, so, you're a veteran.
I think it's...
You don't look old enough to be there.
Well, for me, it's a great spot to come to see all the manufacturers in one place face-to-face because I think, you know, as efficient as Zoom meetings and team meetings are, putting people together in the same room, especially the after events where people can speak freely and get to know each other better, I think is crucial. But also, I think what's happening in the UK right now, they're shaping policy that will ultimately, despite the fact that maybe the UK is not, you know, so involved in Brussels anymore, the most important part is that if we don't shape the policy internally in our own industry, the bureaucrats in Brussels are going to do it for us, and the outcome is going to be poor.
Yes.
So from my perspective, Specify doesn't get involved. We sit on committees, the FSM-BIM committee and things like that. and offer our support, but we don't, it's not our job to come up with the standards. It's our job to report the standards correctly. And so making, you know, being part of this and listening to the conversation and help facilitate it, because the United States is going to take a different direction. And quite frankly, the United States is not talking about carbon.
No, not at all.
Yeah. And I don't see that coming anytime in the next 12 years.
I can tell you that I did a podcast recently, which actually be out. It's coming out before Christmas. And that was not a subject they were discussing. In fact, it was almost the opposite. I was literally, and they were open about it, and I was quite shocked. Because it was a completely different direction we're going.
We're operating right now in the United States, again, as if energy were free.
Right, okay.
And I think, you know, they're poking straws in the ground everywhere. So, I mean, I think energy is going to be relatively inexpensive in the United States for at
least
a decade.
That's what we need here. Yeah. Ours is ridiculously expensive.
It's interesting. Actually, it was one of the questions from the panel yesterday was actually what happens when our political landscape changes, which is likely to happen in the next 4 years. But actually, as an industry, we have children and we have to leave the world in a better place than we find it. Mm. So irrelevant of what the politicians do, I think as an industry, we should be doing something anyway. We should be looking about leaving the world in a better place.
Yeah, definitely. So, I agree. And I think although the UK is quite a small country, people do respect what we say, and we often punch above our weight a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
At the end, from my point of view, it doesn't matter what some politicians think or are doing at the moment. The world is turning, and sooner or later we will have this problem to solve, and we have to change our style of living. But this is the moral or the ethics thing we have to do to save the world, for our grandchildren and children. But on the other hand side, it's a great opportunity for us. When we invest in innovation in this field, mm-hmm. we create advantages in the worldwide competition. Now I'm talking about the European manufacturers. So then we are ahead of the market. And sooner or later, also in America, this will be a topic.
It will be sooner or later.
This has nothing to do with personal opinions or something like that. It's the reality. Mm-hmm. It's a fact. So this will follow. And when we start now being interested and in doing our utmost to find solutions to reduce the CO2 emission and all these kind of things, then we will have an advantage in the worldwide competition as manufacturers.
Definitely. And I think it specifies position that we want to make sure that the right information can be found. So we're developing AI search among our entire portfolio of companies that we have, so that manufacturers who actually are spending money on innovation can be rewarded by consultants going in and saying, I want a piece of equipment that is this efficient, and it's not all about first cost. There is a lot of misinformation in the marketplace, mostly driven by manufacturers creating their own standards rather than there being a single standard held where everybody's held accountable to. I think it specifies responsibility to report the information well so that the manufacturers who are spending money on innovation rise to the top when a consultant is looking for the right piece of equipment based on the customer requirement.
We've got a couple of minutes left, so just a couple of subjects I'd quite quickly like to cover. Which is outside the conference, really, but I guess it might be talked about. Well, it is being talked about at conference, is AI. Like, how do you see, and we're all using it, ChatGPT, but how do you see it impacting in, I mean, it's helping all of us already, but how do you see it impacting in your
system? It's efficiencies again, right, isn't it? Actually, you can spend a lot of time writing something or looking for something, and we now have a tool where it collaborates and pulls that together. So it is the future. It's going to change parts of our industry. And it's better to be in that than outside of that. So I think if you don't embrace it, then you'll get left behind. It's as simple as that.
And in Bob, in your business, you're using AI.
No, for us, AI is a big term. I would say machine learning, which I would put in part of it as AI, is something that we've been using for 2 or 3 years because we have when we create content for our manufacturers, we've got people on staff that have been doing this for 15 years. But we haven't added that many more heads because we're using machine learning to make this go faster because there's a lot of things that are similar. And so if you can start with what's similar and it can be put on your screen, then you can already start with something that's there, which is often how AI works. So, you know, if you use the right prompts to write a speech, you can get 90% of your speech right before you even write the first letter. And then so I think it's more of an enhancer than it is a replacer.
No, I think there are. You've got to know what you're putting in, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So I think from our perspective, we're trying to figure out how we take AI and our machine learning and help the existing employees we have do their job better, more efficiently, and have a higher output with fewer mistakes. That's how we approach AI.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing now.
Yeah, I think AI is already a reality in most of the companies, as also at MKN. But I think it's important that when we are using AI also for in the future, that there is a clear purpose and a value at the end for maybe our customers. Otherwise, it's just actionism, and that's what I see today. It's the same with sustainability. Everybody is talking about it, blah, blah. But at the end, there should be a real
benefit
for the market, for the people using it. And I think this is the beginning of the story, so let's see. But at the moment, everybody is using it. And not all it makes not sense all the time.
I think my biggest concern with AI is right now it's been somewhat democratized. Everybody can use it in some way if they want to today. What I'm concerned about is the amount of money it's going to cost for the computing power to actually do this. I'd hate to see this only be affordable to the Fortune 2000 companies. And so all of a sudden, it's not available to the small businesses anymore because it's too expensive or it requires too much trained personnel, too much expense to have access to the supercomputing computers. That's what worries me because I still think this is shaken out because the ROI hasn't proven out yet.
No.
So how is it going to prove out in the end? It'd be wonderful if it stayed democratized as it currently
Definitely.
Is.
Definitely. And it would also be wonderful if someone would build a robot to clean my house.
Yeah. Yes.
Very quickly, because we got running out of time, but what are you hoping to get out of the conference? What's success look like through the end of the next 2 days?
For me, firstly and foremostly, we are a people-to-people industry. These give us great opportunities to network, spend some time with our peers and our colleagues and our competitors, share ideas, collaborate, talk about the big topics that are coming ahead. Just setting that roadmap out. I was fortunate yesterday to become part of the FEA Council. So it's something that I've been discussing for a number of years. There's some real topics that I'm passionate about, and hopefully now being inside and involved with FEA that enable me to.
And your role's changing slightly at MKN, is that correct?
It is, absolutely.
Am I to say that?
Yeah, you are. Absolutely, yes. I started where you started, Rad. So my passion for the industry is being food service consultancy. Mm-hmm. And we're a project-driven business, really. And because of that, I've looked as a support services to consultants. A lot of the work that I work on are project-driven. Mm-hmm. So the intention is to actually export that. If you look at what the UK do well, consultants export well. So mm-hmm. you take the four or five top consultants, 67% of their work is overseas.
Yeah, true, sure.
So for us, it's no longer limiting me just to the UK as an island, but to support that mechanism globally mm-hmm. for the company. So I'll become more sort of consultant lead for the organisation going forward. So it's a bit more travel.
Yeah, yeah.
Not so sustainable, but obviously just to try and follow that through and support the market.
We might bump each other in the airport again. Yes. As we seem to do that all the time.
We always seem to bump into each other in airports.
And Martin, quickly, what's success for you at the end of today for the conference?
Yeah, at the end, I think the most important point is to that people meet, come together, having a networking together, have a discussion, being inspired and get new information that they never had before, helping them to optimize and make their companies ready for the future. So, but the personal contact, I think this is key.
And Bob, sign as many manufacturers as you can to Spotify. I mean, Spotify, Spotify.
Yeah, really the most important thing for me is to make sure that the manufacturers know that we're here to help them with their digital strategy and process. Because in a world of uncertainty, and as Wayne said, you know, it's manufacturers have a global job, especially when it comes to specification. Mm. And if we can be that single source of truth that people know that they can go to, that they can find exactly what they need, and they know it's up to date, and it gives it to them in the format in which they like to consume it, then I've done my job. And I think that we have a long way to go with a lot of manufacturers still who just haven't found that journey yet.
But you are kind of like, from what I see in the UK, you're almost like market leading now. Is that fair to say? I
mean, getting
that's
there. The tipping point is being
on
hit.
The clasp.
I was going to say, because I only ever see your product around, so it's the go-to, I think.
Yeah, well, we want to be the single global source of truth. That's what we want to be.
I like that. Okay. Well, gents, thank you so much for your time. I know you've got a busy day, so I appreciate it. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Thank you, Rad. Appreciate it very much.
Food Service Equipment Association, FEA, is the food service and hospitality equipment industry's largest trade organization. We represent our members with a powerful voice on a national and global level. Our members benefit from information, involvement, and influence at the very highest of levels and are incorporated in all that we do. The membership remit encompasses a full spectrum of food service equipment manufacturers and importers, distributors of light and heavy equipment, and service providers. If you would like to join the FEA or find out more, please visit our website at fea.org.uk.
So now I'm joined by three more industry professionals. I've got a couple of business development gentlemen. I've also got the former chief executive of the FEA. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. How are we?
Good.
James, I'll come to you first. Sure. Introduce yourself to the listeners.
I'm James Connolly. I'm business development manager for Southend Cold Rooms. I've been in the industry now for nearly 33 years.
Are you looking good for it?
Thank you very much. Best side out and all. Been with Southend for just over 25 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, long time in the industry. Spent most of my adult life in refrigeration.
Right.
Started out originally as a fitter turner, which I believe. That was my... Okay. I got into the trade, started an apprenticeship, had an accident at work,
right.
And ended up in sales.
Okay.
Couldn't stand anymore in front of a machine to do.
And now you look after that. For a long absolutely. Time, look after the UK sales.
Absolutely, yeah.
Self-fair. Keith, we have you finally on the podcast. Sorry, it's been a long time in the waiting, but welcome. How are you?
I'll try not to disappoint. Thank you for the invitation.
Introduce yourself to the listeners.
Yeah, so Keith Warren, I was the former chief exec of the Food Service Equipment Association. That involved a lot of technical and policy work, work that we did to try and influence government to the way of thinking that we thought would make the industry have a better tomorrow than perhaps it's today. Looking to future-proof and protect the industry. In the UK and also across Europe, we have a very active role within EFSEM, the European Federation of Catering Equipment Manufacturers. So it gave exposure to a lot of different aspects of the industry for which I'll always be very grateful.
Yeah, okay. And James, thank we know you. Each other well,
we do.
So
we
welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks so much. I'm James Olbort from Ultrasham UK. I'm the UK commercial leader. I've been in the industry 30 years, just over 30 years,
wow,
actually.
From what,
somebody called
10?
Me a veteran. I know, yeah, it feels like that, actually. Yeah, somebody called me a veteran the other day. I'm only 46, so I don't know how that goes. But yeah, I started out at Britannia Kitchen Ventilation many years ago on the tools, on the manufacturing, moving into installation for about 16 years. And then we merged with IMC, which became Lincat, which became Middleby. And then I had a trip over to Auckland in New Zealand and set up a factory over there, where they still manufacture now, actually, under license, okay. The IMC part of it and the ventilation hoods. And then I was at CED Fabrication for 10 years, and I've joined Ultrasham from January this year.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah,
and
look,
we'll come back and talk a bit about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe, James, you want to start us off. We're here at the FEA conference, obviously.
Absolutely.
How's it been so far? Is there... I know it's early, you know, we're coming up lunchtime. Is there a theme or what? How's it been for you so far?
Yeah, no, it's going to be very interesting.
Okay.
We're obviously at the early stages of the first day.
Yeah.
Second day, sorry. And, themes coming through are sort of AI. Everybody's talking about AI at the moment. It seems to be on everybody's lips. I think we're all sort of using the technology and getting to grips with it.
Yeah,
it's mind blowing.
ChatGPT,
absolutely, my best friend. It's amazing. It's really going to change the industry. I think it's really going to efficiency wise. It's going to bring a whole new era, I think, to the way we work going forward. So it's exciting times. Yeah, it's really good. I'm enjoying it. Yeah,
I think it's something you've got to get on board with, isn't it? I don't think you can really put too much resistance because I think it is the way it's going to be.
Definitely.
I personally don't know much about that, but I'm sure I'll be educated this afternoon. But I think it's the way it's going to go. I think it's just going that way, isn't it? With or without us, we may as well jump on board with it.
Exactly.
It's going to take over.
And Keith, for you, the conference,
I think what I see is the, we all know that, is the complexity and diversity of the industry that's always there. The change is constant. Mm. And we've seen that through some of the figures we heard this morning. We look at the economic figures in the UK. We look at what's going into the design process to try and give us what we want as customers when we eat out. And that complexity is always there because what it highlights, I think, are the difficulties that the operators face. Whether it's menu change, you know, we're fickle people as customers, and we'll change our mind at the drop of a hat. So where does it all feed through to the kitchen is the key issue. Hmm. And it's about having the right suite of equipment that will do the job, give you that flexibility, but also give you the quality of food you need, the quantity that you require, and the time that's available, those key basic tenets. And I think what we hope to see later on is, yes, some future of the industry, but it is that principle, and we suffer it a lot within the industry, of equipment being bought on price rather than its functionality, its length of service, and some of the other aspects that we know about. And that's the key dynamic, and I think this is where the equipment industry's got to keep working harder. It will keep evolving and developing its products. And yes, what we see coming through that is the whole sustainability strand in its broadest sense.
Yeah.
Let's not just look at embedded carbon. Let's look at total cost of ownership and whether that's financial cost or carbon cost, because there's no question, carbon's the currency of the future. But then where does AI come into that? Where does data feed in? Where is it a help rather than a hindrance?
Mm-hmm.
And an age-old problem, who owns the data? That's going to be a big challenge for our industry.
Yes, yeah.
A lot of fragmentation in the industry at all levels. So a lot of pressure going to be on some constituent parts to declare data.
Totally agree.
That we as customers, when we eat out, may not be happy with it be shared with some of those elements.
Other FBA, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot to come, but we've got a basis of, you know, 400,000 units out there producing food and drink for us to eat out of, and they've got to trade through what are some very difficult conditions at the moment. But just to finish up on, the great thing, and one of the fortunate elements about having been in the industry for so many years, wherever there's a challenge or a difficulty, the operator industry responds to that and comes out of it maybe in a slightly different form, but stronger. And it just keeps evolving. And that will be the same with the current dynamics. The industry in 10 years' time will be very different as we know today. We know
and,
that.
And just kind of picking up on that, King, maybe James as well, how do you feel the general industry is at the moment, as in the food service equipment industry? It's been an interesting year. I mean, from my perspective, I found ups and downs. It's, you know, it's either we're flat out or it's quiet. I don't know how you're finding.
A mixed bag all round.
Mm.
I think there was a month or two during the year we could have all sort of switched off the lights and went home.
Yeah.
Mainly down to the fact of, not in terms of advance orders or deposits, things like that, but it was all down to jobs being pushed back, decisions being delayed, uncertainty in government, you know, a bad vibe out there generally in the industry, which end users are, we're all picking up on, slowdown in terms of footfall across the industry as well.
Definitely,
it's really affected things generally.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, picking up from where James there, it was steady for a long time, I felt. Yeah, there wasn't many peaks and troughs, and then it sort of fell flat for a while. But then saying that, there's still a lot of consultants' work out there.
Mm.
There's a lot of new chains that are trying to rear their heads, sort of just getting in early. That's probably the way to do it. Try and get in early, as early as you can to them, and try and build great relationships with the dealers. And I think that's what we've all got to target. You can only be as busy as your dealers are, I suppose.
Yeah. Keith, your view on that? I know you're kind of out of it, but you know, still very involved. And
I speak to many people, and there's some work I'm doing that touches a little bit on this, but. I think it's flat at the moment, and why wouldn't it be? Because of the pressure that's on the consumer. If there's pressure on the consumer, that puts the pressure on the operator. Yes, it's patchy, but then even in the good times, it was always patchy, because even in the good times, businesses went bust, operator businesses went bust.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is the dynamism, I think. But the key issues that where the investment is going, as I see it, is yes, in automation, because typically what operators want is 20% output, probably from less 20% less kitchen space, and probably if they can get it at 20% less cost, whether that's labour or operational cost or equipment cost. So they do that by investing in better quality equipment to do that job. And if I go back, I'm fortunate enough to remember it, to the mid-1980s when the first combi ovens came in, I remember the voice around the industry is, who's going to pay that for what's effectively an oven?
Mm.
Because you can buy a standard oven and a range and do a similar job on it. Well, now there isn't a kitchen that's specified that doesn't have a combination oven in it.
Of course.
And so this is what we're going to see, I think, over the coming years as operators look to invest to save cost, manage waste, reduce labour. The pressure points that we heard about in the conference this morning can all be addressed by the engineering of better equipment that will meet those needs. And I think we'll see more of that, and I see more recognition of it.
Yeah. James, if you feel
no, that, saying that's what Ultrasham, that's what we drive, and that's from the family that still own it now. That's their view, and it's targeted with our multi-cook ovens, which I think probably launched a couple of 3 years ago now, but it's definitely targeted at the labour side to drive that down as much as possible, because that's such a big cost, and it's a ventless unit, so that also comes with cost. So everything they do as a family from above through all the R&D team is to develop that and target the space. Yeah. The cost, and that's what it'll be the going focus, forward for it. That's what they believe in. They're strong believers in that.
Just to add to that, if you ask chefs what they most need in the kitchen, they'll probably say another meat as the chef.
That's right.
Actually, that's what they want. And how do they get that? By automating tasks, being clever with what the equipment they use. Because what you haven't got is another pair of legs running around, pair of hands manipulating food. So it's about managing that process.
We've only got a few minutes left, so I know it's been quite a short time together, but what does success look like for you in the next day or tomorrow when you're driving home in terms of this conference? What are you hoping to get out of it?
Well, it's a bit expanding the knowledge base, and obviously we all enjoy the networking, and we're a broad church.
We're a broad church
of people. It's a great industry. It's brilliant. We enjoy it. It's great fun, and you learn something new every day, especially with the FEA at the conference. It's great. I'm looking forward to the AI thing. I have a bit of an interest in that, and it is going to evolve very, very quickly. That's the scariest thing about it. We've really got to upskill. A lot of us are going to have to get to grips with this. I don't mean we'll have to get on ChatGPT and spend half the morning, but I think our clients are going to use it, and they're going to expect us to keep up with their speed. So the only thing we can do is match it. And I think the changes are going to be quite dramatic, I think, certainly in the next number of years, certainly in the next 5 years, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I agree. It's that interface that's going to change, because there's been some resilience over connected equipment in some areas about data and what you do with it. And this is not just about data, it's the manipulation of information for the benefit of the operation. And I think it's going to be, well, it's going to be revolutionary every world of our lives, but certainly in food service equipment, the whole issue of when the order is placed, the stock control, what goes on in the kitchen to prepare the food, to ensure it goes through the server, it comes out to the customer, logging what we had this time, what our nutritional needs are, what our dietary needs may be that actually will influence the menu. The fact if we've got a dietary need, we only see a menu with the stuff we can have, not all the lovely stuff that we can't have. And that goes on a lot with the industry. So I think it's more about the customer experience of tailoring it. And we saw this morning about tailoring to the customer need. Well, giving individuals what they want based around what they can have or what the kitchen can prepare is going to be key. And then where does all that data go behind the scenes? It's going to be phenomenal, the change. And the great thing about it is we've got the electrical engineers, we've got the mechanical engineers, we've got the data engineers who can manage that and start to bring it all together and give that dynamism, which becomes the game changer. It's an exciting future, actually. Definitely. Very exciting.
Security is going to be a big aspect of it too.
It is a big aspect.
The security of the data. Who holds the data?
Yeah.
Who polices the police?
I think that might turn into a bit of a battle that might get political further down the line.
Because
whoever holds that has got a hell of a lot of knowledge, haven't they?
And there's part of society that doesn't want to share their data and doesn't want their data shared in that way.
Yeah.
And we've seen a generational change in that recently. So how the industry adjusts to that will be a challenge, I think.
It will be.
Yeah. And privacy issues as well, of course, not just in industry data, but company data, at a corporate level is important too, because, we don't want our competitors knowing exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it. We want to keep those sort of things private and things like that. So there'll be a fine balance in terms of how we share that information, in terms of energy savings and efficiencies and how those things are all calculated and brought together, and presented, of course.
Yeah.
And James, for you, what does success look like tomorrow?
Oh, God, sorry, for me. I think it's the networking. I mean, things like this are great, and to go and see a lot of the clients in there with consultants in there, it'd take me 3-4 weeks to get round. So to be in one room and to sit down, have a coffee and a chat with them all, I mean, that's the part I love the most, and I think it's always quite successful when you stick a load of industry peers in one room. It's good fun. But like you say, every day's a school day, and you get educated along the way. So excited to see what happens with this AI this afternoon, and I'll go in with some something I knew that I didn't know today, I guess. That's my, on the drive home tomorrow, trying to piece it together.
Okay, well, sadly, that brings us to the end. I know it's been short and sweet, but hopefully next year, you're more than welcome to come back. And I know you are, James, in the new year, coming back on the show, and we'll get a bit more in depth. So thank you, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Cheers.
Appreciate it.
Great.
Thanks for
that.
Okay, so now I'm joined by three more industry leaders. Actually, I've got someone here I know quite well, Alex, from recruitment side as well, a manufacturer, and then also a, I don't know if it's the right word, importer of solutions for energy, I suppose. I'll let them introduce themselves. Alex, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And you?
Yes, good.
So, yeah, I'm Alex Waring. I'm the director of Foxton Budd Recruitment, which is now in its eighth year, but I've been recruiting for the food service equipment sector now for 18 years. Effectively, everybody that I recruit for is supplying something to hospitality and food service.
Right, okay.
Predominantly, that's equipment, but it can also stretch into other areas. It might be beverage systems, it could be produce, it might be service, technology, but everything, all of the impetus of what they do is focused in and around hospitality and food service, which was where I worked in my early career. So
yes,
a constant baseline of passion about that sector.
Okay, and we'll come on to sort of staff shortages and,
yes,
and recruitment,
yeah,
and maybe you can give some hints and tips as well, if you don't
I
mind.
I can certainly try.
Philip, how are you?
Very well, Radford. How
good,
are you?
Yes, good to see you again. You're looking remarkably fresh. How, do you want to introduce yourself to listeners? And
So Philip Sanderson, I've been sales director now at Valentine and Cuisine Equip for around about 8 months. I've been with the business for closer to 8 years. Before that, was working at Rationale as a senior RSM, and I've been in the hospitality industry since I was 15 years old when I started as a potwash in a local pub. So in terms of Valentine and Cuisine Equip, with Valentine, we are specialists with our electric fryers, manufacturer based out in Switzerland. And with our Cuisine Equip business, we're talking about induction, we're talking about pasta extruders and things of that nature.
Great, fantastic. Richard, welcome to the show. Thank you for your time. So, introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you. So my name's Richard Fordham. I'm director of Secatronic UK. So we've been working with a company called Secatronic out in Germany for about 8 years now. And we're effectively their agent in the UK, importing and project managing the installation of electrical energy management systems. And really it's sort of helping that transition away from gas kitchens to electric. Mm-hmm. One of the issues that we find regularly is that there just isn't sufficient power available for what the caterer or the design consultant wants to do. So what we try and do is manage the available power that we've got to make those kitchens transition easier. And then the data we're able to get out of that, we can then aid the client in making efficiency changes in terms of how they're managing their kitchens and stop wasted energy. The other thing we have aligned to that, which we'll be launching probably in the early part of next year, is a separate utilities management dashboard that will enable us to measure not just usage of gas, water and electricity and its cost, but also the operational carbon, which is a bit of a game changer for us.
Okay.
So that's where we're from. A bit like Philip, I started out washing out probably a lot longer ago than you were. It was about 1979, I think, so I've been in the industry for way too long. But it's in our blood, isn't it? So
perfect. Okay. So just, I'm going to change tack slightly, because I know obviously here it's a lot about embodied carbon, AI. We have spoken already the last couple of segments about that. But as we've got Alex, let's talk about recruitment and staff shortage.
Yeah.
Because it is an issue, isn't it? I mean, a wider issue across the hospitality network. But are you seeing that in, you know, quality candidates,
yeah,
as in
absolutely.
Specifically about food service equipment?
Yeah, I think the crux of it is the food service sector, and it does all cascade from there. And I think that, you know, it is an incredibly tough time for food service at the moment. I think I'm pretty sure that I read a statistic that suggested that by the time we reach this next budget, 110,000 jobs are going to have been lost in food service.
You know, as in the hospitality sector?
Yeah, in the hospitality sector itself. And of course, that's going to have an impact on the suppliers to that sector and what, you know, what they can and can't afford. But it's always such a juxtaposition when it comes to recruitment and talent, because you know, you have to have good talent in the business to ensure that you're going to get that business. But if you can achieve that in a leaner way by, you know, really sort of focused recruitment, then that's what you need to do. But I think from what I've seen in the industry, it seems mad to sort of hark back to COVID still. I know we keep on talking about, you know, we still keep talking about COVID, but it has been a bit, it's been quite an eye-opener from then that, well, for one, in the hospitality, there are always pockets that win, aren't there? You know, yeah. in a crash economy, you will always see areas that remain strong. There will be areas that hit the wall very quickly and other areas will sort of take up the slack. You know, in that case, it was online ordering, you know, takeaway, which was already very strong, but just had this absolute surge. Going back to the credit crunch, we're all old enough to remember that. That was, you know, casual dining had this growth phase after that. And it will always impact recruitment in our sector as well. What I'm seeing in terms of talent shortages, there seems to be a big shortage of project managers.
Right, okay.
That's a real issue. And we hear it again and again. And, you know, that's definitely problematic. And I think that, you know, I know that service businesses, I don't tend to recruit for field service engineers. Mm-hmm. I recruit for senior technical, but not so much at ground level. But that's a nightmare to recruit for. And I think that, are we maybe paying the price of a lack of training for a long period that we've had? We talk about this a lot, that
yeah.
there are skills gaps in the sector and we don't, as an industry, tend to have any classic training grounds.
Mm.
So I think that that's a problem. And I think the other area that we see a lot where there are some frustrations or a desire for change is in and around sales and the approach to sales. And there's always, I think more and more companies now are looking for a balance of being able to bring in some fresh thinking and talent from outside sectors. But if you do that with no experience at all, you know, we've all talked today, like you guys, I started in the you know, in waitressing as well. We've all been on the ground there. So if you know what that looks like, and I think over the years, I've identified that there are certain sectors that transfer really nicely into this one, and there are some where you'll find you'll bring people in and they will just bounce out. It just doesn't
yeah.
suit them. But what's always really nice about this sector is that the people who come in and like it stay. It's a very passionate, very friendly, you know, environment. And it is very relationship driven. And I think that that causes some consternation sometimes. I think people from external, what we might deem as more blue chip or polished sectors, will look at our sector and struggle to understand why it is so deeply entrenched in almost personal relationships when these are business decisions that we're making. Mm. And that's, I am starting to wonder whether that's something that's gradually changing.
Possibly.
Yeah, I don't know what you're it'd be interesting.
I think just picking up on your, I was going to say when you mentioned about staff shortages, one of the our big bugbears is the quality of project management.
Yeah.
It is absolutely, it's in the gutter at the minute, really. The number of projects that we work on, and a lot of it is down to communication.
Yeah.
That just doesn't come back in terms of what status a project is in, when you need it on site, you turn up to site with your team, oh, it's not ready.
Well, yeah.
Hold on, we've just booked hotels for the guys, all of that sort of stuff. And no one tells you. But and they're all costs on your business.
Yeah, and presumably it'd be a real challenge. You know, you could, if you looked at somebody from construction, for example, I'm speculating, but I'd imagine that maybe that operates a bit more in a more slick way and communication, let's say, is stronger in construction. But if you bring someone straight in, they're still miles behind on what it is that you do and how we do it, isn't it?
So it is, but I think, I mean, we're working with a number of main contractors now, and again, that brings its own headaches with them in the way they operate.
Yeah.
And as a small business, you're a tiny cog in this huge machine. Mm. So to try and get listened to is difficult at times, and we take a very strong stance in terms of our payment terms and everything else, which brings its own challenges dealing with these guys. But overall, it's the level of project management is poor. And I look at the industry in general, and just picking up on your point on sales, there's some really talented kids coming through, really talented, but I don't think there's enough of them.
No.
There really isn't. And you see some that come through, and it's a bit like with some of the chefs. They all want to be the next Gordon Ramsay, but they don't want to do the legwork at the very beginning.
Yeah,
it's a bit like that with some of the salespeople. They think they know it all without actually having really gone through that learning process.
And yeah. Philip, I'm sure your view. I mean, you've got Superjam.
your jam. I mean, you know,
we have super
everybody
jam.
Would want super
everybody
jam.
Loves jam. Yeah. So looking at it from the manufacturer's perspective, we can relate entirely to what I'm hearing from you both. Our job as a supplier, as a manufacturer, is to add the value to the distributor network and make sure that we are getting involved at those early stages, making sure that we are the right equipment is being specified. I had a situation quite recently where a quotation request came in. We do have a very close relationship with this particular end user, and we noticed quite quickly that the quote that we had been asked to produce was not the standard specification for their customer. So we were able to intercept that early. So we're putting a lot of time and energy at the moment into training our internal sales team, our external sales teams, so that they can confidently go out there. And as a manufacturer like Valentine, we sell on features and benefits, we don't sell on price.
Yeah.
So it's really important that we're able to stand on our own two feet, and that we're not afraid to charge for the extra added value
Absolutely.
That we bring to the table.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things, you just picked up on it there, in terms of it's education. And certainly when I look at what Secotronic is, it's a technology that 5 years ago no one had ever heard of. And it's still, to some degree, like that. A lot of people don't really understand what it does. So it's our emphasis has to be on educating what it is, what it does, and what its benefits are. And that takes time. When I first started talking to the guys back in 2017, I spent the first 3 years sort of banging my head against the wall because I couldn't get anybody to listen to what this thing was and does. And I knew I had this gold nugget that had dropped in my lap, and I couldn't get anyone to listen to me. And eventually a design consultant said, "Are you still doing that electric thing? We want to put it in on this project." And then it took off.
Yeah.
And now it's going fine. But it's all about education from our point of view. And making sure, as you say, it's not a case of selling a box. It's a solution of making sure it's the right thing for the right customer.
Yeah, and I think there's a big opportunity even for businesses who are selling boxes as well as the solution providers to be training with a relatively low cost attached to it, but to be training even at a regional level, have their sales staff to be selling like key account managers, to rather than go in and say, "I've got this product, this is what it does, how many do you want?" to be going in and saying, "What do you do here? How many people do you serve? What are your challenges? What are you facing?" No discussion about price, almost no discussion about product at that point, to identify a solution and then deliver it to them. And I think that one of the problems that we sometimes see in the sales world, particularly with less experienced salespeople, is almost an idea that if you're selling to someone, you're almost conning them. And it's like you're not conning anybody. What you are doing is making life easier for them. You're probably delivering something which is going to be a revenue stream. You know, and I think that there is definitely a skills gap in that type of selling. And I think that there is a gap in training in that kind of selling as well. But, you know, if you get from day one, if you have your sales team selling in that way, you've got ready-made key and national account managers. You don't then have this big jump to then try and get them up to that level because it's ingrained and it's in the muscle and that's how they're operating. And like I say, it's relatively low cost as well. It's not a huge expense to deliver that kind of a training course.
It's interesting you should say that because I had Keith Warren on the last segment and he said exactly the same thing. There's a similar theme there going on. Well,
it's interesting, isn't it? I remember I worked for a company called Masters and Andrew, if you remember them back in the early 90s. And when you joined, you had a six-week block of training before you were allowed out on the road.
Yeah.
And Roger Flanagan, God bless him, who was the sales director then, used to petrify us because if you had a sales meeting, you'd all be sat there and he would come in, he'd pick on someone, "Sell me this," and he'd pick a product and you had to sell it to him.
Yeah.
And you used to sit there going to the sales meeting and go, "Please not me, please not me, please not me." But
did he say, "Sell me this pen"?
No, it was like, sell me a polycarbonate container. God, how do I do that? But it honed your skills. But to not go out for 6 weeks until you knew that product inside out. And then exactly as you say, Alex, you're selling a solution. You're not selling something out of a catalog.
No, absolutely. And once it's instilled, I don't think you ever lose it. So, you know, once you understand solution selling and features, you know, features, advantages, benefits, for some people, very few, I think that is quite intuitive. But I also feel it's unfair to expect somebody to make that leap. You know, you do need that bit of training, and it's not particularly complicated. It's not a difficult concept. But if no one's ever shown it to you, you can't sort of instinctively just expect them to go out and start selling that way. And I think that as soon as you become skilled in selling a solution, it takes away so many of the barriers that some salespeople will fear. They'll fear getting in front of the CEO because almost in their mind, this person is some kind of other being. Or, you know, they'll fear getting into a price discussion because it's expensive and they're going to say no. And, if you flip that around and turn it into a solution and get them fully up and running in terms of solution sales, you can break down so many of those barriers. And arguably, sounds like I'm doing myself out of business here, but, you know, if you have a team, if you have a small, a lean team of very effective solution salespeople, you could, you know, that's a huge cost saving. You could actually reduce your team with some very, very good skills, and like I say, have them ready to take, you know, you could get them getting into Kia Nationals really quite quickly.
It's really interesting as well, because when you look at it from a when you've got that solution sales expertise and you do your presentations or your sales pitch, whatever, you get that feedback from whoever it is that you're presenting to, this guy knows his stuff.
Yeah.
And you instantly feel more comfortable, and when it gets more technical...
And they trust you.
100%. And that's a situation I was saying earlier on. I had a situation with a call yesterday that I thought was going to be like a half-hour presentation. It ended up as like a two-hour meeting that got really technical.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, it's just an overview. No, it wasn't. But I felt comfortable about it, and you go and
you
do it.
You know your product, and you're passionate about it.
Exactly.
So just to pick up on something you said before, Alex, Philip, why do you think our industry is so... I'm not going to use the word incestuous because that sounds a bit strange, but relationship driven, really.
So for me personally, there seems to be two different ways of direction that people go in. Some people may choose to go look at the bigger picture, invest in the company on a long term basis, and kind of go through the ranks and earn your stripes. There are some people that we have seen that seem to hop around and maybe they think that there's a quicker way, I think. And I was involved in a conversation earlier on. We were talking about a chef who didn't necessarily want to put in those hard hours on the pass and go straight to the very highest level. And I think you have to. I think you have to invest in yourself for your long-term success.
Okay. Well, sadly, that brings us to the end. We could, I think, talk all afternoon. It's been great having you all here. So thank you so much for your time. I hope
you
all enjoyed
thank
it.
You. Yeah, excellent.
Absolutely.
Really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much indeed.
Great. And enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, that brings the podcast to an end and another year at the FEA conference. I hope you've really enjoyed this podcast, this special episode we've recorded here. It was fantastic to sit down with the CEO of Rationale, and he gave me 15 minutes of his time, which was really great because he's a very busy man. And also 9 of my industry colleagues giving some real insights into AI, embodied carbon, staffing and recruitment, and energy optimization. If you've got any comments or anything you'd like to cover, please email me at radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. As you may have heard, we've got confirmed for next year 33 episodes booked in for season 3. If you want to come on the show or you've got any comments or any subjects you'd like me to cover, please pop me an email. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is exclusively sponsored by Ali Group and is a Sound Rebel production.